Timothy Leary lives. No, 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 he's outside looking in. Timothy Leary lives. No, 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 he's outside.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is an examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the ineluctable, indelible, and indispensable influence of drugs on society. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs, nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when people who use drugs are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, we're going to talk about community and recovery and humanity. But first, on December 12th, the Oregon State House Interim Committee on Healthcare held an informational hearing to help prepare for the upcoming 2019 legislative session. One of the topics they discussed was a safe consumption space. Loyal listeners will recall that safe consumption spaces, otherwise known as overdose prevention sites or supervised injection facilities, are harm reduction interventions that have been proven successful around the world at saving lives and preventing the spread of communicable diseases, as well as preventing needle litter, enhancing public safety, and many other positive benefits. More than 100 of these projects are in operation in countries around the world, including several in the European Union. Unfortunately, there are none yet operating legally in the United States. However, there are efforts ongoing in a number of cities and counties here in the U.S. to set one up, including in Philadelphia, Seattle, San Francisco, Denver, Ithaca, New York, and Portland, Oregon. Well, as I said a moment ago, on December 12th, the Oregon House Interim Committee on Healthcare listened to invited testimony on the subject of safe consumption spaces. One of the people who testified was Dan Epting, a peer mentor and harm reduction activist.
My name is Dan Epting. I am a state-certified recovery mentor and Oregon Health Authority-certified peer support specialist and traditional health worker. I identify as a man in recovery. I recently celebrated 10 years clean from all chemicals. My preference was opioids.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks very much. My last use of heroin was in a Nordstrom's bathroom on Broadway in downtown Portland. I frequently used drugs in public restrooms because that was the driest, safest place. And frequently people walked in. Syringes were left behind. I can't tell you how many hospitalizations or how many times I had abscess where I just had to place surgeon at home and take care of them. I've been stopped on the streets, arrested for possession of drugs. And the one thing that I really want to say is that addiction, as we are seeing more and more, can happen to anybody. And it is not a moral failing. It is a disease. And until everybody starts to think that way, we're going to be stuck. I was fond of saying that I thought I would die on a Starbucks toilet. I used dope in bathrooms, cars, alleyways, and I still see the same things going on today. In fact, even more. I worked at a residential treatment center in downtown Portland for 4 years, and frequently on my way to and from the method of public transportation that I took, I would see people actively injecting drugs in the open. It's dangerous. It's unsightly. It's shameful to the addicts who are using. There are syringes that end up left in public places where they have no business being, and drug paraphernalia and remnants. The idea of a safe place where you're monitored to prevent you from overdosing and prevent the spread of disease is definitely revolutionary. And with that being said, I think as time moves forward, something that will become accepted, just the way that Suboxone and methadone treatment are accepted today, whereas they once were frowned upon. You know, the amount of money that we're spending on emergency room visits, ambulance response, police response to public overdoses. I don't have numbers, but I know it's got to be immense. You know, so yeah, I'm here as an advocate. Additionally, when I got clean, I believe there was one way to do it. And over the course of the last 10 years, being a person with the ability to have linear thought, I'm realizing that recovery is an evolving process, just as anything is. And what worked 50 to 60 years ago when Bob and Bill, or longer than that, sat down and came up with the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous has changed significantly since that time. And as a society, we need to evolve with the new things that are coming forward.
That was Dan Epting. He's a peer mentor and harm reduction activist. He was testifying before the Oregon House Interim Committee on Healthcare on December 12th on the topic of safe consumption spaces. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Today's guest is Ilona Delabo-Gormley.
My name is Ilona Delabo-Gormley. I am a nurse in an acute care setting, and I volunteer at PPOP, the Portland People's Outreach Project, doing harm reduction services in the street by bike and at the Outside In Syringe Exchange.
First of all, tell me about PPOP.
Well, PPOP is a fantastic collection of people working in harm reduction in Portland. We are a branch of the People's Harm Reduction Alliance in Seattle, who are also doing some wonderful things to support drug user health in our communities. And we show up with supplies, with information, with a whole lot of love, and try to respond to the needs of the people using drugs in our neighborhood.
Are you focused solely in Portland, or do you also does PPOP also do work out in the other the rest of the metro area, like Clackamas or Washington counties?
We absolutely reach out whenever we can. We are primarily working in Portland, in the inner city, and a lot of the outreach that we do on a weekly basis is in inner southwest and southeast, inner northwest and northeast, and then we have a fixed site in North Portland in the St. John's neighborhood. However, we do recognize that there are underserved communities in the Portland metro area, including parts of Clackamas County, and do our best to show up with supplies, to work with the organizations and the folks on the ground in these surrounding areas to meet the needs of people as they arrive.
Just recently, the Oregon Legislature's House Interim Healthcare Committee held an informational hearing. One of the topics they discussed was safe consumption sites. For the benefit of listeners who maybe are tuning in for the first time, what's a safe consumption site all about?
Yeah, I'm so glad you're bringing some attention to this, Doug, and really thank you for all of the work that you do. I was able to attend the legislative hearing, and I was thrilled that there are folks at the state level who are interested in having this conversation. And I think that safer consumption spaces are a really rather elegant approach to what is a relatively complicated issue. But essentially, it serves to provide a safe place for people to use substances that they've acquired in the community. And what that looks like is a warm, dry, well-lit place with access to supplies and information and connection to other services in the community that they might not otherwise have, so that in the event of an overdose, somebody is there who can respond and reverse that overdose, and so that we can reduce rates of infection, public use of noodle litter, and engage people in their resources that they might need.
There are the detractors, people on the other side who will argue that, well, you're providing a place for people to break the law, providing a place for people to use these drugs. And my response would be that we have unsafe consumption spaces all over the metropolitan area, and that's how people get sick and die. The dangers that we know about, that people are familiar with, are contracting HIV or AIDS and overdosing. What are some of the other dangers that people run into when they're using drugs that access to safe supplies and a safe space might prevent?
Well, first, Doug, I just want to appreciate that you are recognizing the reality that regardless of what we might believe about drugs or those who use them, people are using drugs, and people are in the face of stigma and shame and criminalization. They are using alone and without tools or help, and people are suffering and people are dying, and this is not necessary. This is absolutely preventable. And on so many levels, I think that these kind of safe consumption spaces are a really powerful solution. And it does include, I think, the obvious opportunity to reverse what would otherwise be a fatal overdose. And I think my experiences working both in the community and in the acute care setting have shown me the monumental impact of inadequate access to supplies and information. We see so much more than just fatal overdose. We see skin and soft tissue infections like cellulitis. We see bacterial infections of the blood. We see endocarditis or infections of the valves of the heart, osteomyelitis, infections of the bone. The septic emboli, which can lead to strokes. And in many cases, these types of infections are not only preventable, but they require oftentimes 4 to 6 weeks of intravenous antibiotics. And when there are no suitable alternatives, that means that folks are in the hospital in an inpatient setting for 4 to 6 weeks to receive this kind of treatment, and that presents a whole kind of collection of challenges. In addition to and beyond the burden of individuals who are experiencing illness and who are facing fatal overdose, and not only for themselves, but for people around them, the systems that are absorbing the implications that this involves are really stacking up an incredible cost, not just in human suffering, but in the finance and the resources that it takes to respond appropriately to these kinds of challenges. And because as it might seem clear to most people, it can be really challenging to stay in the hospital for 4 to 6 weeks. Sometimes these folks become high utilizers of the system when they're not able to complete a full course of antibiotics, and the infection or the issue that initially brought them into the hospital doesn't get fully resolved, either because the course of antibiotics or a course of hospital stay was just too much to bear, but also because of the improvements and opportunities for growth that we have as hospital providers to respond with care and compassion to people who use drugs. So I think it's really complicated, and if the city or county or state level could utilize just a fraction of the resources that we are currently using to respond to complicated issues like this, to open up a facility or a space where people could come and safely use their substances. And again, regardless of whatever we might feel or think about drug use, I think we could prevent an immense amount of stress on both individuals experiencing suffering and on the systems that are set up to respond to them.
You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Our guest is Ilona Delabo-Gormley, a registered nurse who works in acute care and is a harm reduction volunteer. She's also a hero. Ilona and everyone who works in harm reduction, they save lives. That's what heroes do. It's one of the greatest honors of my life to know people like that. And it's also my honor to be able to share their words and thoughts with you, dear listener. So now, before I get any more teary-eyed, let's get back to that interview. Talk to me a little bit more about stigma. I think that's kind of important. I mean, it cuts to the heart of all of this, whether it's alcohol or other drugs, injection drug use or smoking. There's a level of stigma that can really be counterproductive. But yeah, talk to me for a little bit more about stigma.
I think it's central to a lot of the ways that we respond to each other. And personally, I believe in the inherent worth and dignity in all people. And I think that we can care for each other, whether we are using drugs or not, whether using drugs is working for us or not. And I think that's a concept that is fundamental to my understanding of harm reduction. Which in its many expressions is rooted in an acknowledgement of people's dignity, and it seeks to reduce the risks associated with all engagements, but especially for those who are marginalized and who are stigmatized because of engagement in certain behaviors. And we have most certainly a hierarchy and a way of judging all kinds of behaviors. And I think it's especially striking when it comes to drug use.
What else should I be asking about? What else should you think? What question do you think I should be asking?
You know, I think there are people who are nervous about talking about a safer consumption spaces, which go by many names, safer injection facilities, supervised consumption. I think the arguments to me for opening up a space that is safe for people to consume the substances that they would otherwise consume in public or alone and in private without anyone who could respond if something were to go wrong is multifaceted. And these kinds of spaces make sense at every level. And beyond just the individuals who might be utilizing services like that, people who are experiencing illness, who are experiencing pain, who are experiencing losses in their direct circles, who are experiencing fatal overdoses, that there are real consequences to neighborhoods and to businesses who are really not prepared to address the complex needs of people using drugs in public, and to the healthcare system, from first responders to hospitals to the city and county. There's every reason to believe that a space like this in our community and in communities across the world can address some of the concerns that are affecting people's lives, whether they're using drugs or not. And again, I'm just very struck that if we could put just a fraction of the resources that we currently utilize to open a space like this, that not only could we prevent some of the burden to individuals, but really to all of us, that we are all affected by drug use in our communities. And if we don't know someone personally, we certainly have encountered what kinds of impacts, especially public drug use, have in our lives and in our society. And if the argument for humanity and for the recognition of people and their capacity to heal and to connect with each other, to contribute to their communities, if the argument for humanity is not sufficient, then there are clearly arguments in every other direction that we could simplify complex problems, at least moving a step in the right direction, if we can provide a safe place for people to go to use substances that they're going to use anyway.
PPOP, which you mentioned before, that's part of the People's Harm Reduction Alliance up in Seattle. I've met Shiloh and a few other folks from there before. That's an example of organizing by people who use drugs. There are large organizations, actually, of NPUD, the International Network of People Who Use Drugs. There's KPUD, the Canadian. I suppose some folks might find it surprising, but this has been going on for better part of the last decade or two. But the organizing of networks of people who use drugs, building that community, and actually, you know, making a political voice. Could you talk to me for a minute about how that works, or how that is working?
Yeah, well, I think that it ties into this concept of autonomy and of the belief that every individual is an expert in their own lives and really can determine best for themselves what will work and what is working. And I think that there is a huge power in, especially in the setting of stigma around drug use, for people to be able to step up, to own that expertise, to determine for themselves what is truly working or not for themselves, for their communities. And I think that the more we engage people in the decisions that they are affected by, the better those decisions are made. So certainly for the People's Harm Reduction Alliance and for the Portland People's Outreach Project, it is absolutely vital that these are peer-focused organizations. And I think we, as a society, probably have some opportunity to do more to center the voices of people who are impacted by the the systems that we design, by the resources that we provide in our communities, and by the decisions that we make, so that, you know, we really are honoring that kind of expertise. And I can't think of a more lovely group of individuals. And there are all kinds of people who use drugs, and it is so clear when we see the space where that aspect of somebody's life can be claimed, in examples like the People's Harm Reduction Alliance, which I feel so fortunate to have encountered in my life.
That was my interview with Ilona Delabo-Gormley. You can find out more about the Portland People's Outreach Project by going to their website at portlandpeoplesoutreach.org. And for now, that's it. You have been listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Many thanks to my guest, Ilona Delabo-Gormley. A big thank you to our engineer. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. Free Culture Radio has a webpage at kboo.fm/freeculture, where you can find this and a complete archive of all of our past shows. Free Culture Radio also has a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/kboofreecultureradio. Please give it a like. You'll find links there to past shows, announcements about upcoming programs and events, and other stuff like news items that may be of interest. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!